the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Wednesday, December the 13th, 2023. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things started with
the Daily Denogram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or naga nuggets. You get to make the call. I like this. It says, children seldom misquote you. Ooh. Yeah. In fact, they usually repeat word for word what you shouldn't have said in the first place.
Finally, some censorship we can get behind.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of the blogcast.
Twisted history.
Let's do this.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
It's important.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your twisted history.
It's true, you know.
You might be quizzed.
See, there you go. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1962. NASA launched Relay 1. That was the first active repeater communication satellite. Put it up there in orbit. It was the dawn of the communications age. And since then, nobody has any privacy. And on this day in 1972, Eugene Cernan and Harrison Schmitt began the third and final extravehicular activity, known as an EVA, or moonwalk, of Apollo 17. To date, they're the last humans to set foot on the moon. Frankly, there's nothing up there, and consequently, no real reason for going back.
I claim this planet in the name of Mars.
Jack Davis, writing in the Western Journal, says that as the 2024 congressional campaign begins, which it has, it's gathering steam right now, a powerful pro-Israel group is planning to wage a major battle against what it believes are vulnerable members of the coterie of far-left Democratic House members who label themselves the Squad. Yeah, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee is planning to spend more than $100 million. That's almost four times its 2022 spending of $26 million, according to Politico. Now, Democratic Rep. Jamal Bowman, you know him in New York. That's the fire alarm guy. Well, he's high on the list of targets, although it's unclear if solidly ensconced Democratic Rep. Ayanna Pressley, you know her, of Massachusetts, will be targeted. She should be, but she's not as noisy as the rest. Members of the Squad, Pressley, Bowman, and Democratic Reps, Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York, Summer Lee of Pennsylvania, and Cori Bush of Missouri have been highly critical of American support for Israel in the aftermath of that October 7th slaughter of Israelis by Hamas. Hamas must be wiped out. It just must be. But AIPAC spokesman Marshall Whitman said the group is in the process of evaluating races involving detractors of Israel, but they haven't yet made any decisions. And Whitman said, our sole criteria in evaluating candidates is their position on U.S.-Israel alliance. We'll not only oppose detractors, but also strongly support champions of the U.S.-Israeli relationship. And by the way, Whitman added, wanted to point this out, that the group supports members of both parties. So there's a certain legitimacy in that, in knowing that. Now, AOC views AIPAC as a threat. And to hear her tell it, quoting her, she says, they take money from Republican donors, they pour it into Democratic primaries, they virtually exclusively target Democratic incumbents. And so my concern is less about the dilution of progressive power. And then she added that the Democratic Party needs to support Squad members. Really? I would argue, and it wouldn't take me long to argue it either, I would argue that the Squad is the primary reason Democrats have been losing so much recently. And then she added, she says, let me quote her again here, but what I have concerns about is the rupture that this would represent in the Democratic Party and the hostility that it could involve if our party doesn't stand together against some of the most disruptive tactics that we've seen. Well, Ms. Cortez, I would hasten to point out that you brought it on yourselves. Now, AOC continued saying it would be destabilizing if Democratic leadership didn't come to the defense of incumbents, saying these members are going to have to be defended by our party leadership, and they need to be defended as vociferously. I didn't even know she knew what the word meant, vociferous. But they need to be defended as vociferously as incumbents that have been primaried from other elements of the party. Now, coupled with the loss of fundraising through the liberal group Justice Democrats, Max Berger, a strategist who formerly worked at Justice Democrats, said the squad could be in trouble. He says, I can't tell how bad it's going to get in terms of setbacks and losses. There are a few races that are going to be very close or have reason to think will be challenging. Now, Usama Andrabi, communications director for Justice Democrats, called the AIPAC intervention an existential threat to the power you've already built. I love the way they use that word, existential. I think they love hearing themselves say that word. But anyhow, Omar and Bush are already facing challengers, while one for Tlaib could be waiting in the wings. And that part of this whole thing is getting very interesting. Trouble is, the mainstream media is not reporting on it because it embarrasses the mainstream media's personal political agenda. So you really have to read around on the internet to find out who these people are who are entering the fray to oppose the squad members. Now, this knucklehead Bowman is considered vulnerable because his antagonism for Israel runs against the grain for his district's Jewish community. And why he doesn't understand this is beyond me, but if he doesn't understand it, heck, that's good for us. That's good for anybody who wants to go up against him. Democrat George Latimer, the Westchester County executive, is a potential AIPAC-backed challenger. So here again, it stays within the Democrat Party. I mean, the squad is an entirely different political ideology. I know, I said is an entirely different political ideology, but that's what the squad is. They're a group, a small group of a completely different political ideology. And I would argue it's not even Democrat. It's more socialist than anything else. It really resembles the more oppressive political ideologies of the Middle East or the old Eastern Europe. Now, the publication Slate noted that pro-Israel PACs have already started airing ads against Lee, Bowman, Bush, and Omar a year out from the election. We're a year out from it, and they've already started placing the ads. So this isn't a fly-by-night effort. But I find it very interesting that it's a bipartisan effort. They're working with both parties on this. Matthew Holloway, writing in Trending Politics, says that ultra-right beer, the brainchild of a conservative commentator, Seth Weathers, was birthed in the fires of controversy that consumed Anheuser-Busch's Bud Light. I don't need to do a forensic analysis on that one for you. You would probably have that etched in your brain. I don't think anybody doesn't know about Bud Light and that stupid Dylan Mulvaney episode. And just in time for Christmas, ultra-right beer has doubled down on its stance against woke culture and the pervasive imposition of transgender ideology with its Real Women of America 2024 calendar featuring, oh, you ready for this? Riley Gaines. Yeah. Now, as reported by the American Tribune, Weathers' anti-woke brand is approaching $1 million in sales, which in the overall scheme of things at this point isn't a great deal, but nothing to be sneezed at. And they announced the promotional calendar aimed at celebrating beautiful conservative women. Now, you look around the conservative landscape in politics, and there are a lot, well, both in and out of politics, but there are a lot of downright beautiful women. It's always been that way. Now, according to ultrarightbeer.com, yes, that is a real website, Conservative Dad's Real Women of America calendar is a celebration of conservative women who are fighting woke extremists and in the process to preserve real women. And 10% of sales are going to be donated to the Riley Gaines Center to protect women's sports from extreme leftist ideology seeking to destroy real women. And it features the most beautiful conservative women in America. I want to point out something here, too, that I've noticed, and I'm sure you have, about Riley Gaines. You know, when she first was asked to testify over this Leah Thomas episode, Leah Thomas being really a male, she was kind of shy, a little bit bashful. She was a little green when it came to sitting down in front of a microphone and cameras and what have you. But she is now becoming, I don't know if you've noticed this, but she is becoming a very powerful advocate for preserving women's sports. And in the process, she has completely shaken off her battle rattles, her stage fright, mic fright, camera fright. And I'm here to tell you, my friend, she will be, well, she already is, but she's going to continue to be for quite some time a force to be contended with. So the list of featured conservative luminary ladies includes Gaines, Dana Loesch, what a great choice, Kim Klasick, I love her, the Babylon Bee's Ashley St. Clair, Blaze TV's Sarah Gonzalez, Josie, the redheaded libertarian of X fame, former congressional candidate Catalina Love, president of the Tampa Bay Young Republicans, Brittany Jean, conservative TikTok influencer Bethany Bartlett, and OANN executive producer Peyton Drew. And several of the ladies shared sneak peeks via X. OANN, that's One America News Network. Okay, that's another fledgling conservative network that's starting to make some inroads in the media business. But Bartlett shared a video to X announcing her partnership on the calendar with the comment, "Conservative dads at Ultralight Beer has brought us back to the good old days when beer companies made calendars with hot chicks in them. The days before crazy liberal feminists bitched about objectification. Can I get an amen?" You got an amen from me, sweet lady. You sure do. Describing the promotional calendar, Weathers told Fox Business, he says, "This calendar is in no way intended to discredit trans women because there's no such thing as a trans woman. We've reached incredibly stupid times when it's controversial to say men can't be women. This calendar will serve as a reminder men can never replace the beautiful women of America." Wow. How's that for a statement? Now, the calendar is designed to be a loving homage to the heyday of the pinup when men would look forward to monthly calendar inserts in prominent magazines to appreciate the beauty of the feminine form. Let's not forget, too, the years during World War II when pinups were a big deal. Betty Grable was one of perhaps the most popular pinup. And you saw those Betty Grable posters all over the place in the military during World War II. Now, Bud Light, which was the most popular beer in America for years and was suddenly brutally dethroned in the Mulvaney scandal, has yet to recover. So Benoit Garb, the company's U.S. chief marketing officer, resigned in October. Garb presided over a 13.5% decline in Anheuser-Busch's U.S. third quarter revenue, with a devastating $27 billion in market value just evaporating as of June, following that harebrained decision to partner with Dylan Mulvaney. Now, reportedly, Mulvaney saw a hefty $185,000 payday from Bud Light in May of 2023. And that campaign, by the way, we need to point this out, that was led by Vice President of Marketing Alyssa Heinerscheid. Remember her? And she openly insulted the beer's traditional customer base, saying the brand was fratty, kind of out of touch. And yet she had no statistical proof to that regard. Heinerscheid would later take a leave of absence and then was subsequently fired. I don't know what took them so long to do that, but by the time they got around to that, I mean, so much damage had already been done to the brand and associated brands in the Anheuser-Busch umbrella. I hate to admit this, but I think that this whole argument about term limits for everybody is a little bit misplaced, because there are a few career politicians who I think are very good and need to be retained. Of course, you know, if they want to do their entire career in politics, there are ways to go about that. You know, you can run for a different office, that sort of thing. But let's just say that you've got a really good mayor of a city, and the city is prosperous, the jobs are plenty, the housing is readily available and affordable, and this particular mayor is term limited out. I mean, what are the odds you're going to get somebody that good to replace him or her? Not so good, right? I mean, look at Chicago. Now, the Daleys, Mayor Richard Daley and then his son, they were accused of some influence peddling, some corruption. But as a friend of mine told me one time, Chicago's politics is corrupt, but it works. And it did. The political system in Chicago worked for decades. Oh, gee, I would argue even well over a century. But lately, Chicago has just gone to hell with their mayors. Lori Lightfoot was just god-awful. And now this bonehead Johnson, who replaced her, is even worse. Well, in a case like that, you definitely need term limits. But I think that's such a sketchy thing. But yeah, there are some people who need to be term limited out. And unfortunately, when it came to Congress, that wasn't the case with Sheila Jackson Lee. She just elected to run for mayor of Houston. And after the initial election, she was forced into a runoff with a conservative Democrat by the name of John Whitmire. Now, Whitmire is a career politician. He'd been serving in the Texas State House for a long, long time. What brought him to the office of mayor of Houston, I have no idea. But I guess maybe he'd been eyeballing it for some time. Who knows? We had two terms with Sylvester Turner, who wasn't entirely bad. But boy, that guy was, I mean, he was corrupt. Maybe even Chicago-style corrupt. And he was term limited out, thank goodness. So when I first heard that Sheila Jackson Lee was stepping away from Congress to run for mayor of Houston, my God, the hair on the back of my neck went up. Now, I don't live in Houston. I live in Sugar Land. But after the first of the year, there's a pretty good chance I'm going to be moving into Houston again, because I want to locate close to my daughter. And she lives in Clear Lake City, which is right there by the Space Center. And that's a nice place, nice area of town, and it would be a good place for me to settle in. There are also bedroom communities around there. There's Friendswood, there's Pearland, there's Alvin. So there are other areas that I could locate to. But, odds are I'm going to be in Houston again. And thank God this runoff... This runoff made John Whitmire the winner, carrying 65.3% of the vote. Yeah. And Sheila Jackson Lee just got 34.7%. Now, I have it on the down low that one of the things that sank Lee in this election, particularly the runoff, was the bad press she got going into this. You know, all of those recordings came out of the way she was abusing her staff, the way she talked to them, yelled at them, hurling expletive after expletive after expletive. And that sort of thing just turns Houston people off. So, despite the landslide victory being made official only early this last Sunday, Lee has already pivoted to something with which she's intimately familiar, representing Texas' 18th Congressional District. Now, that's a Houston area seat she first won back in 1994. You talk about career politics. Now, the Houston Chronicle, which is a Hearst publication, it's a birdcage liner and not a very good one, but They reported that a campaign representative said she had quietly filled out re-election paperwork Sunday evening. She's desperate. She needs a job. She needs a paycheck. And then she confirmed her re-election bid in an official statement online. She posted to X Monday afternoon, "I thought about the many more gifts I have to give my constituents of the 18th Congressional District. Those gifts involve more hard work and my ability to get the job done." This is how she thinks of herself. She thinks of herself as a queen. The woman is really psychotic. And now she's going to run for Congress? Jeez. Now, she has a challenger, a former Houston councilwoman, Amanda Edwards. I don't know much about her. She once interned for Lee. So she has a pretty good idea of what it's going to take to beat SJL. And in a further twist, Edwards pulled out of the very same mayoral race that Lee just lost so she could focus on the congressional seat left open by Lee. See, so it's musical chairs is what it is. Political version of musical chairs. And as the Chronicle noted, Lee basically cruised to victory virtually every time she's been up for re-election since 1994 in that congressional race. But there's been some redistricting. And the area, the 18th district that Lee had been representing, has changed a lot demographically. So I don't think it's going to be the cakewalk that she thinks it's going to be. And she's likely banking on that bit of history repeating itself. She's 73 years old. And her sudden pivot back to her congressional seat comes on the heels of her lopsided, very lopsided mayoral race lost to Whitmire. Now that, in and of itself, would be a tough pill to swallow for a Democrat who's used to handily winning re-election. But the mayor-elect made sure to dig the knife just a bit deeper during his victory speech. This was priceless. This was Saturday night. Whitmire said, "People want to go to work for me because we respect people. We don't bully people. My family taught me to treat people the way you want to be treated. And that works wherever you are, regardless of what community you're visiting with. Treat these individuals like you want to be treated." Obviously, a not-so-veiled reference to Lee's abusive behavior toward her staff. Again, the audio exists. I was going to say it's on tape, but it's in the cybersphere, my friend. It's there for you to hear if you want to listen to it. I recommend you don't, because it's not very pretty. I mean, she's every bit an ugly personality that she is an ugly person. And how she has managed to get people to vote for her time and time and time again just really baffles the fire out of me. I don't know about you, but my eyes always glaze over when I have to look over all these statistical graphs and stuff. But here they are. Paul Crespo, writing in American Liberty, says that newly committed aid has reached a new low between August to October of 2023 for Ukraine. An almost 90% drop compared to the same period in 2022. Now, Ukraine is increasingly relying on core groups of donors like the U.S., Germany, and the Nordic and Eastern European countries that continue to pledge and deliver both financial aid and weaponry, like F-16 fighter jets. Where do you think those come from, huh? Well, the outlook is unclear since the largest pending aid commitment by the European Union hasn't been finally approved. And aid by the U.S. has been on the decline because, well, as you well know, internally, we here in the United States are starting to lose our enthusiasm for this engagement in Ukraine. What was it that George Washington said as he left the office of president, his farewell speech? He said, he said avoid. He used the word avoid foreign entanglements. Well, this is yet another one. And of course, as you know, the military industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about has been busy about the task of keeping us involved somewhere in the world at all times. We always have some kind of a war or a skirmish or hotspot in the world to preside over. Now, there's a graph here that shows the largest donors of military aid. And, boy, it's amazing. It's actually a graph that reflects billions of euros, not dollars, okay? But the United States, we're the biggest donor. 43.9 billion euros. Germany, 17.1. The UK, in third place, at 6.6. Then there's Norway at 3.6, Denmark 3.5 billion euros, Poland 3 billion, Netherlands 2.5 billion, Canada 2.1 billion, Sweden 1.9, and Finland 1.4. And what all these nations have in common? Well, they're all members of NATO, of course. Now, to be sure, the chart also reflects, for instance, this nearly 44 billion euros that we're contributing to this effort. It does include arms and equipment. Okay, but just the same, that's a huge amount. And we're getting stuck with the lion's share of the tab. I mean, we're giving far more than all the other mentioned countries together. Germany, UK, Norway, Denmark, Poland, Netherlands, Canada, Sweden, Finland. You add all of those together, we're still outspending. And you can pretty well bet we're donating the, and it's probably what we're doing, because if you think we're going to bring all that equipment back when this thing is finally resolved, you're crazy. It's not going to happen. Going to do the same thing they did over there in Afghanistan. They're going to leave the stuff laying around over there. And then you wonder why we can't keep our technological advantage over other nations. I don't know. It's a sad situation. You know, first of all, we need to examine whether or not we should continue to support Ukraine, at least to the degree that we are. I mean, we need to push Europe to take on the brunt of the military assistance effort because it is, after all, their front yard. To the Comedy Corner with Jeff Allen.
2 years of COVID, 2 years. I learned one thing in 2 years. Socialism will never work in America. Thank you. COVID hit, and the richest nation in the history of the world was out of toilet paper in 3 days. I don't even get that. CDC comes out and says it's a severe respiratory illness, and the entire nation went, "We need toilet paper." I think you're wiping the wrong end, sport. And I noticed one thing. Socialist countries always run out of toilet paper, all of them. There's always lines around the block, miles for toilet paper. That's why they starve their people to death. Nothing in, nothing out. You don't need the toilet paper. I wrote that. I'm a 2.0 GPA, and I came up with that on my own. Last time I turned 65 last year. I got Medicare. Thank you very much. Yeah. Got my card, I told my wife I'm going to the doctor. She says, "What's wrong?" I said, "I don't know, it's 12 bucks, I'm going every day." A lot of old guys go to the park and feed the pigeons. Me, I'm going to urologist. Something's gonna break and I'm gonna be right there when it does. I gotta take care of myself because my wife Tammy's getting involved with my health in ways I'm not comfortable with. And I saw what she did to her father. Her father moved in with us after her mother passed away. And all this man wanted to do, he was 78 years old, all he wanted to do was watch Gunsmoke and eat ice cream. That's it. 4 days into living his dream life, Tammy runs over to him and says, "Get in the car, we're going somewhere." She takes him to the YMCA. She signed him up for the Silver Sneakers Senior Exercise Program. She took him down there every day like it was an 8-year-old boy. She signed him in, she signed him out. Then she made him eat vegetables. This man ain't had a vegetable in 50 years. And I'm watching him eat broccoli one night, he was chewing it like it was gravel. He's like, "Ah! What's going on, Mike?" He says, "If I don't eat the broccoli, I don't get the ice cream." 78 years old. You think that would be enough? No, she makes him walk the neighborhood every night. "Get up and walk, Pop." He's walking, walking, walking. One night he face planted. We had to go to the emergency room. And by the way, if you and your wife have to take a scene to the emergency room, get your story straight before you get to the emergency room. Holy cow, they separated us. They thought, at one point I said, "You think I'm punching him? He saved my life. I'm golfing 5 days a week. She doesn't even know I'm out of the house." 4 months he lived with us. 4 months. I'm walking by his room. He's packing a bag. Where are you going? He goes, I'm out of here. I didn't want to get married again.
Make it a wonderful Wednesday. Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.